White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 448.
White Rocket Entertainment.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! And welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our beloved Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and for our big coverage of the Iowa caucuses tonight, no. I'm joined as always by my co-host, Rachel Maddow.
John Ringer.
Wait, who are you?
I am John Ringer.
Yes.
I am not in Iowa.
Oh, man. I thought I had Rachel Maddow on the line here to talk about Amy Klobuchar and stuff. That was all going to be exciting. Oh, well. I guess we'll have to resort to just talking about old Auburn sports. Darn. Well, that's great. We've got several things to talk about. The first thing, John, that I want to point out to folks that don't know is that you and I, with our special guest Jared, the yard sale artist, we just did... Excuse me, I'm still dealing with that pneumonia thing. I'm better now, but it's still kind of hanging around. You and Jared and I, the three of us, did a special about 45-minute long live video show yesterday, Sunday, February 2nd, Groundhog Day, Super Bowl Day. It was a very busy day yesterday, and it's on YouTube. So if you didn't get to see it, or you can just listen to it, you can just put it on and listen to it like a podcast. Go to, you know, to our AU Wishbone TV channel on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search AU Wishbone or AU Wishbone TV, and it should be the very top thing on there. I think I actually pinned it as our featured, you know, opening video now. So it should be right there where everybody can see it. And so yesterday we just talked about a little bit of this, but we wanted to come back and do our regular Monday night, Tuesday morning show to talk about some of the sort of the same topics, but in a little different way from what we did on the video show. So, what's our first? Is there anything we need to discuss before we get into the basketball?
No, let's go to basketball.
Let's do it. Well, as you put it on our outline tonight, basketball is our happy place. That was, you know, last year when things weren't always going great in various ways of life, I said that Auburn basketball was my happy place. It's where I could go like twice a week and be happy. And even if we didn't win, there was just something about that team last year that was very likable. I said several times on the air that team we had last year, those guys were just, I genuinely rooted for them as human beings, not just as people in Auburn uniforms. You know what I mean? And that's, yes, that's kind of unusual. We usually don't get to know our players quite that well, other than, you know, just a few exceptional ones. But there was just something so likable about that team. And so I just, before we get into the details of, you know, the big win over Kentucky and all that, I just wanted to ask you your thoughts on this. Do we love this year's team yet? Because it's a different team, right? I mean, there's some carryover and there's a lot new. Do we love this team as much as we love last year's team? And if not, what do they have to do to earn it?
I mean, I love every Auburn team in every sport. We'll start there. Mm-hmm. But there were two things about last year's team, men's basketball team. One was the individual players on that team, some of whom had been on the team for a while. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, Bryce and Jared had been around for a while, and a couple of the other guys. And so that, you know, you had a built-in connection with them. But also the style of play they played was fun. And so it was a fun watch. And so I love this team. I don't know if they're as good as last year's team. I don't know. You know, my goal as a fan forever was I just wanted Auburn to go to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did that last year. We went to the Final Four for the first time ever, which wildly exceeded my expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so my goal now is for Auburn to go to the NCAA tournament. That's my goal every year now. And so this team is going to do that.
Yep.
You know, this team is going to make it. It's a question of what the seeding is going to be now. And they need to have some big games coming up for that. So I, you know, this team plays really hard and they have some, some fun, exciting players also. And also we're at the midpoint. I mean, there was last year's team wasn't themselves at this point.
No, that's right.
So they weren't who they became. And I think Bruce Pearl was talking today about how this team, you know, is 19-2, and there's a whole bunch of areas they can get better.
Oh, absolutely.
And he knows it, and they know it. So yes. That is exciting.
Yeah, I think that last year's team – I think you make great points there. I totally agree with everything you just said. I think also that last year's team was an offensive machine once it got into the postseason. Mm-hmm. And there's something – that, and they did it with joy. You know, mm-hmm. they weren't grind it out, do the pick and roll, do the backdoor cut. They were a high-flying, soaring, you know – They made it look easy, and they made it look fun, and they did it with happiness and joy. And I think that players, our big three on that team, the three that we lost now, every one of them was a fascinating story in their personal life as well as on the team. And so that went a long way, too. And then there's their accomplishments, which were unparalleled. But I think this year's team, because of the way they have to play, and it's not, you know, their fault, quote unquote. It's just this is the way that team functions currently. The type of team this is a tough, grinded out, play defense, turn the ball over. You know, it's more that kind of a team. And that kind of a team just doesn't have that same curb appeal. You know what I mean? It's like last Yes. year's team is looking at a Ferrari running on all 12 cylinders, you know. And this year's team is like we're looking at a big semi truck, and it can be just as powerful and get you where you need to go, but it doesn't look like a Ferrari blazing down the highway at the same way. So it, like you say, it has the potential. I mean, they could, and we'll see what they can accomplish with the big old 18 wheeler instead of the Ferrari this time. That's fine, but yeah, it's just a different personality, and so we have to kind of come to love them in different ways, I think. But I just thought that was interesting because that really kind of stands out to me. They beat Kentucky, and that goes a long way, too. We're like 4-3 in the last 7 games against Kentucky. We beat Kentucky in back-to-back games. I mean, it's a different Auburn basketball world. It's funny. I was going back and looking at Bruce's record since he started at Auburn. We forget. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I forget that his first 2 years – we had losing records and didn't even make the, you know, didn't make the NIT really or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how far down in a hole our program was, and in, you know, relatively speaking, how quickly he's gotten us up to where we are now. What made me think of it was somebody on Twitter said, "I don't know if Bruce will ever have a winning SEC record at Auburn," and I thought, "How does he not already have one?" And I went and looked, and those first 2 seasons were just brutal.
Yes.
Not cause of him. They would have been a lot worse with just about anybody else. And so...
No, because of what he inherited and you know...
He cobbled together units out of broken bits and pieces, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so Kentucky. We talked about it a little bit on the video show, but... I think we talked a little bit about how neither one of us had 100% confidence we were going to win that game going in. How long did it take you to figure out that we had a very good chance to win that game?
Well, I mean, even, you know, I think a few minutes into the game, Samir was attacking and making plays and scoring points and showing that he was kind of back to where he was early in the season.
Mm.
And I think we were playing good defense and getting some early fouls of some of their key guys. And I think that was big. I felt a few minutes into the game that we were in a really good place with them.
Yeah. It's like we said that before that they play in every game, even the games we've lost, those 2 games we lost, they played good enough defense it's remarkably like the football team last year, this past fall. They played good enough defense to stay in the game for most of the game. And what ended up getting them was a lack of offense in key moments. Again, remarkably similar to the football team. I hope Bruce isn't getting contaminated by too much exposure to how the football team went last year. But the difference, I thought, in the Kentucky game compared to like the Alabama and Florida games was that they played that defense and held Kentucky down even when they weren't scoring. But then, like you said, they found creative ways to get points on the board and never get that far behind. Against Alabama and Florida and Ole Miss, really, until the very end, right? They held the other team down, but they were so bad on offense that even holding the other team down, they still got down by like 15, 20 points. Mm-hmm. Against Kentucky, they weren't scoring much, but they were holding Kentucky down, and they were finding enough ways to score that they never got down more than like 5 or 6, right?
Yeah, no. They Samir and Wiley were making free throws early, and that kept him in the game.
Kept him in the game. Yeah, I think otherwise, if Doughty hadn't been doing everything he was doing in the first 10 minutes of the game, it would have been another one of those games where we're down 20 before halftime. And yes. I don't think there's any coming back on Kentucky when you're down 20 before halftime.
It's a different animal.
Different. Yeah, they held it, and it's funny because in the second half when we took the lead, we got up by like 5 or 6 a few times, and then it got pulled even again, and then we got behind a little bit. And there really wasn't much separation until the very end. You know, I mentioned the last 3 minutes of the game. The last 3 minutes are where Auburn suddenly asserted authority. They were getting to the free throw line. Part of that is because Kentucky's best players were fouling out. That's partly because, you know, I was having that argument with a Kentucky fan that when Kentucky's best shooters are fouling out, that doesn't happen in a vacuum. That happens because our players are going at them and they're fouling us. You know,
as we said yesterday, Auburn players were beating Kentucky players to the loose balls.
Yeah, and offensive rebounds.
And the offensive rebounds and the loose balls, and when they did that, it put them in a position where the Kentucky players were then running in trying to get the ball and fouling a lot. And that happened a lot in that game. Auburn got a lot of offensive rebounds, and they got a lot of loose balls, mm-hmm. and that was the difference.
And then in the last 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, it turned into, you know, with about 3 minutes to go, the fouls were pretty much even. You know, the Kentucky fans have been complaining, oh, Auburn got to shoot so many more free throws than Kentucky. It was about even with about 3 or 4 or 5 minutes to go in the game. What happened was Auburn started pulling ahead and Kentucky started fouling. And they fouled Samir several times and Okoro, unfortunately. But Okoro and Samir both got fouled a lot in the last 2 or 3 minutes of the game. And that enabled Auburn to get a lot of easy, not easy for Okoro, but a lot of easy points, and extend the lead out to about 10 or 11, which is what it, you know, was at the end. So we talked on the video show about not wanting to hear Kentucky whining about the referees, but they also whined about the free throws. And I just feel like complaining about the free throws and the fouls doesn't make sense when it's dead even until you start fouling our guards in the last 2 minutes of the game. I mean, of course we're going to have more fouls at that point because we have the ball and the clock is running and you're behind. Mm-hmm. So
the other thing in this game is that they came into this game with the center who on their team who's playing great and the big forward Williams. And I think, Auburn, there aren't a lot of teams that have the size and the strength to deal with those guys. But Auburn did, and Wiley played, maybe his best game since he's been at Auburn.
Yeah.
He was, he got in foul trouble, yes, but he was efficient when he was on the floor. He did a great job defensively on the big center. He
absolutely he did.
Got a lot of rebounds away from him and did, offensively and defensive rebounds. And he, made that other guy work. He got the ball on offense and made stuff happen. And I think and caused fouls for both their big men that way. And so I think he was a huge factor in the game. And then when he got foul trouble, McLemore came in and kept it going and did a great job too. So I think that to me was the thing in that game. Those two guys playing at a very high level, against guys that, were really, really good.
Absolutely. Yeah, he had a great, I mean, Calipari was talking about what a great game Wiley played, and that was pretty interesting. We're back up. Go ahead.
And the other thing I want to say is just that, you know, Purifoy making the three-pointers, if he has confidence and he can make those shots, it's a different team.
A different team entirely, absolutely. Because that's the main thing that's missing right now.
Mm-hmm. Just one consistent outside shooter.
It seems like every team we play has one or two guys that can consistently hit three-pointers. And so we're having to just so grind it out on defense and grind it out on offense to stay competitive. And I just keep thinking if we just had not necessarily a Bryce Brown, but even just like a, you know, if our point guard this year was anywhere near what Jared Harper was doing with three-pointers last year, which was not a lot, but when he needed them, he could step back and nail them. Mm-hmm. And you know, occasionally it's funny because last year – it seems like last year Doughty played the role that Johnson is playing this year, where he comes in, gets a few important minutes, and hits a three-pointer. Yeah. Doughty this year is completely different, right? This year he's the guy that we have to lean on for half of our offense, and with that much more pressure on him, he's taking a lot more three-point shots, it feels like, than he took last year. Is that wouldn't you say yes. That's true?
Oh, yeah.
And he's not the percentage shooter of three-pointers that anybody of the big three was last year. But yeah, so if you can get Doughty to hit a few, and if you can just get Purifoy playing the way we think he can play, yes, this becomes a completely different team. And I'll tell you, the one other thing we really got to fix is Okoro should not be that bad of a free-throw shooter. There's no reason that Isaac Okoro can't make a dang free-throw. He's better from three-point line than he is from free throws. And that's just not acceptable because his game is dry right now. I mean, it may expand. He's young. But right now, his role on the team is, besides playing super shutdown defense, is drive to the hole and draw the foul. And right now, it's like he drives the hole and we all pray that it goes in when he does one of those crazy spin around, upside down, backwards, hanging in the air, throw it up with your left hand back over your shoulder blindly. Sometimes those go in, but more often than not, they don't. It's really more McCormick that can make those go in, fortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But Isaac Okoro's shots are not going in when he does that. And again, it's usually he's got two guys like hammering him, so I wouldn't expect them to. But that means he's got to make his free throws. And I know his percentage is more like 55, but watching him, I would think his percentage was 25%. So
that's fair.
There's just no excuse. He's a better player than his free throw ability. And if Wiley can shoot the way he's shooting free throws this year, then dang Isaac Okoro should be able to shoot a free throw. There's just no excuse.
Wiley has clearly worked a lot on it the last couple of years. He's gotten a lot better.
Yeah, there's no excuse when your big old center is a better free throw shooter than your whatever Okoro is, power forward or shooting guard or whatever. Bruce doesn't really have clearly defined roles on any of our teams. And so, you know, I mean, other than Wiley is the center and usually McCormick is the point guard, other than that, I have no idea what position anybody's playing, and I'm not entirely sure they know either, right? So you made a good point about we have a team that can be competitive and how great that is. Elaborate on that a little bit, if you hadn't already.
Just idea that, you know, for a long time, and just like in Bruce's first couple seasons and in a lot of the seasons before that, you know, being an Auburn basketball fan was tough. It was a tough pill to swallow.
It really was.
And you didn't go to a lot of games with hope, and the season was kind of a grind. And it's just such a joy to have a team that is competitive, and you know they're going to be in every game they play. And it really makes basketball season to look something to look forward to. It really does make this time of year a lot more fun.
And then on the other end of the spectrum, there's Tony Barbee. And I just find myself thinking this. I'm thinking, okay, he's Auburn's coach for several years and they are wretched. They're terrible. He goes to Kentucky as an assistant. At that point, he has to be saying, well, look, nobody could win a game at Auburn. It's just a situation where nobody can win. But now I'm at Kentucky, so I'm never going to lose. And then he comes into Auburn the last several times, and we beat them. How does it feel to go from being the head coach of a team that's terrible, and so your excuse is, well, it's Auburn, nobody could win here, to coming in as Kentucky's assistant coach and having your rear end spanked repeatedly. I mean, that's just got to be the worst professional feeling in the world, hasn't it?
It does, but it's also, I think it's clear, like, he knows deep down that Bruce Pearl is a much better coach than him. And that, but it's also about, I mean, this is to me, I think it's about effort and engagement. And I think, you know, he thought he could roll up and recruit a couple high profile guys and not work that hard or not care that much about everything else. And it would be okay. And it's not how it is.
I mean, it's like he goes and is an assistant mechanic on a Ferrari race team. And he's like, well, you know, I was driving a Volkswagen over there. They couldn't beat anybody. And now he brings that Ferrari down here and the Volkswagen kicks his butt. That's pretty sad. Not only are you're losing to the Volkswagen that you couldn't even get across the finish line. So, well, anyway, I just, there's a lot of ill will towards him and the Auburn family, and I'm just expressing a little of it on behalf of those folks.
No, it's fun to see him run out of the arena.
It is. All right, so where does basketball go from here? I think we've got Arkansas coming up in the next game.
Yeah, Arkansas Tuesday, I believe, and then LSU this weekend. And LSU, I mean, these are both big games. They're both really good teams. I mean, Arkansas is a place we have not played well.
Okay, at Arkansas. I didn't have it in front of me. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, it's at Arkansas. We don't play well in Fayetteville.
Yeah, that's true.
And then LSU is leading the SEC and undefeated in conference, but we only play each other once this year. And
home,
so
is it home or away? Again, I don't know.
It's home. It's in Auburn on Saturday noon Eastern.
We got a shot.
So that, you know, if we win that game, it's a huge tiebreaker thing. And if they win that game, it's a huge tiebreaker for them in terms of the SEC standings.
Think about 2 years ago, we went up and beat Tennessee. Remember that? Mm-hmm. How important that game ended up being?
That's right. And so it's that kind of game.
Yeah.
But it's at home. And again, another huge home game where, you know, the crowd's going to be outstanding again.
So. Absolutely.
And then the week after, you know, so that's Saturday. And then the next week, we play Alabama at home.
I was running the little banner across the bottom of our video show. Said, like, revenge on the tide coming, something like that.
It is coming. We're going to play a lot better at home against them than we played up there.
Yeah. All right. In other sports news, we have signing day coming up on Wednesday. What do folks need to know about Auburn's official signing day as opposed to the early signing day where everybody actually signs?
Well, it's, you know, it's signing day, but it's not the signing day, right?
Well, it's the signing day. It's just that the signing day isn't as important anymore because early signing day is now the signing day.
That's right. So it's different. It's a different deal. You know, it's only a couple of players. As we learned, one of our guys had already signed, right?
Yeah, that's pretty funny. And then the big one that we were trying to get isn't coming. So, yeah.
No, the offensive lineman from Georgia's is not Broderick Jones is not coming. He's
he'd rather sit on the bench in Athens than play in Auburn. So
that's it. But we did get a commitment from a 4-star tight end from Texas the other day, Brandon Frazier.
So we've got like five tight ends on the roster now, if you count that guy.
And I wanted to point this out. Everybody's like, we'll never use the tight end. There are no more fullback types on the roster, in my opinion.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of tight end types. And, you know, I think with Pegues and Brandon Frazier are both, you know, big athletic guys. And then we had the two guys from last year, Deal and Fromm. And Shanker is, you know, the veteran of the group. I think they're going to use those guys. I think Morris is going to use those guys in the offense. I think you could see times with two of them out there at once even. So
They are physical mismatches against defensive backs or whatever, depending on how you play it. So
yeah, and again, you could remember when Morris was at Clemson, they used the tight end well there, and I think it's a safety valve for the quarterback, some easier throws to bigger targets, that kind of stuff. So I'm excited to see where he goes with it.
I'm excited just to have the concept of a safety valve for our quarterback. I will never in my life understand an offense where your only receiving options are downfield, and if that doesn't work, you panic. It's like option one, Seth Williams. Option two, one of the other receivers downfield. Option three. Oh, my God. I just don't. And Nix would get something out of it, but he also might get killed. Why not just have, we used to do it, and it was Gus's offense when we used to do it. I just don't understand, but maybe there's some big important reason that just is escaping me why you don't do it. But yeah, it would be awfully nice. I'm just curious to see the offense this fall, because I'm curious to see an offense that is like the one we have now, but maybe the better version of it. In other words, like the best of it with other stuff we haven't been doing that would help.
Yes. The optimized version.
Yeah. Yeah. A more optimal version. Exactly.
The only thing I want to say about recruiting is that our plan is to do another show after signing day when we kind of go over the signees, the guys who redshirted last year, transfers, and then compare and then look at kind of group by group quickly who left, who's still around, who, we didn't see a lot last year, but we're excited about because they're new or they, we're on the team last year and to get a chance to play. And we're going to, run through that and share some ideas.
Yeah, very good. Very good. So you made an interesting point here that, LSU, I've got thoughts about LSU, by the way, but you were asking, can we learn anything from LSU's success that other teams should copy? Is it like looking at 2010 Auburn and saying other teams saying, wow, I wish we could copy that Cam Newton offense, but without Cam Newton, you really can't? I mean, was it a Joe Burrow thing and a Brady, wasn't that his name, thing?
Mm-hmm.
Is it replicable?
I think a lot of the success they had is not replicable. This is my opinion.
Even by them this coming year, I think.
100%. I think Joe Burrow was the Cam Newton in that offense. He was the perfect quarterback for the, in the perfect system for him.
Yeah.
And I think, like you're saying, it's not the same when you're running somebody different out there. Kyle Frazier or whoever. So,
God, dude, that wasn't nice.
I'm sorry.
Come on, man.
That hurt. That hurt me.
I'm sorry. Okay. I didn't need to slip that
in. That was tough. So,
and I think that's the some of the concepts they were doing, I think are replicable. But some of it is also a senior quarterback, who was a great player by himself, took it to another level, and that combined with an offense that people hadn't seen a lot of with other great players around him allowed them to do that. And now, we'll talk a little bit about where LSU is now, but is it replicable? Are there things that, other offensive coaches can take away from that? If you listen to Dave Aranda's interview with Stuart Mandel and Bruce Feldman, he talked about the LSU offense and kind of what he thought about it and why they were so dangerous. And some of that, the idea of, having a group of plays designed against that specific defense and that they would just adjust on the fly and that kind of stuff is, you got to be really committed to that to make it work. You can't halfway do that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I like some of the commentary during the season was like when Burrow was saying that it would be, like fourth down and three or fourth down and two, and they would decide to go for it. And he's like, I want to throw the ball. I want to run such and such a pass play. And in the past, LSU 100% would have been like line up and smash it up the middle, or something. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, we'll do that. And they did that, and it always worked. And so – yeah, in that sense, their passing game was kind of like Cam with his third down runs that just couldn't be stopped, Now, the thing I want to ask you about that is, though, I see people say, oh, it's the greatest offense in college football history. And I'm just like, whoa. I mean, they may have scored some points. And I know they did. They scored a lot of points. And I know that nobody really ever slowed them down except for us. But that, I don't feel like, I think it was a combination of several factors, but you and I have talked about this before. I don't feel like that LSU team's roster was any more talented top to bottom than any of the last 15 LSU teams or more. Of course, you could say the same thing about 2010 Auburn without Cam.
And yeah, I was going to say, And I understand your comment, but I think like for the other 10 guys, you're correct.
Yeah.
But Burrow is so much better than the other quarterbacks they've had.
That yeah.
Not really true.
Yeah.
But I get it. I mean, you know, they've always had great receivers. They've
right. I mean, good yeah, I'm saying if you put Burrow and this offense with the players they had with Fournette and those receivers that they have that are in the NFL now, they'd have scored more points than this team did.
Probably.
Yeah. And given up fewer.
Yes.
So, yeah. All right. Let's see. We've got another couple of segments to go, but I have to, of course, point out that we have to thank our patrons. Now, we've got several things going on right now for the patrons and for everybody, including the live video show. But we created T-shirts. You can go and check those out. Go to www.auwishbone.com to see a wide selection. We have the Soundboard Fan Club that I believe you were sporting yesterday, John, in blue and in white. We have Better at Celebrating, and we've got special shirts just for the patrons.
Of course, I was wearing the Soundboard Fan Club shirt.
Heck yeah, man. Representing. Absolutely.
Because I'm a fan.
You founded the Soundboard Fan Club, man. Absolutely. So, but you can join the ranks of those who keep our program on the air and keep things going. And for as little as a dollar a month, of course, more always helps and gets you better stuff. We'll have the NCAA brackets, March Madness brackets, coming up soon. And if you're a patron, John will be sending out your official entry code to get into that. And we have a lot more stuff coming along. You get way early access to We Believe, which I'll be finishing up editing, I think, episode 7 pretty soon. We're into the Tuberville years now. A lot of fun. And quite a few other things. It's, believe it or not, John, this is February, so we're just a matter of a few weeks away now from Formula One starting back up, and we'll be doing the Fantasy Formula One season again. We had like 30 teams this past year, and it was a lot of fun. You have Alan J. Porter from Open Wheel and the Bond podcast on Her Majesty's Secret Podcast in there with me, and Mira does it. And then we got all you challengers trying to take us down. So that's a lot of fun. So here are our current patrons who keep our programs and get all on the air and get all those benefits. They include Matthew Flowers, Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, and Phil Amthor. We appreciate you guys so very much. And then there's Gary Grant, Wynn Carroll, Brian Gray, Winston Boddy, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trawick, Logan Chilton, Tom Anderson, Richard Stevens, William Glenn Matthews, Clinton Stewart, and Christopher Stewart. Hey guys, William Morgan, Phil Davis, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, AU Falling Up, Kevin Smith, Jeremy Minton, Johnny Caldwell, Theodore Gary, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, David Hegler, Mickey B, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Joshua Corbett, Ann Kangian, Clay Henson, George Gaston, John McCune, David Evers, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Steve Harlan, Rich Reimer, Timothy. I was just thinking, so many of those folks I've already called their name, and so many more I'm about to call out. We've gotten to actually meet these folks and get to know them a little bit, interact with them in person and on Twitter and all. It is so cool, and we appreciate every one of you. Blake Heron, Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd. Oh, wait, here's something down at the very bottom. Ah, there we go. All right, let me catch back up with where we were. If I repeat you, good for you, because I got to. So Johnny Caldwell, Papa Todd, David Simpson, Don Zederman, Blake Heron, Chris Thrash, Michael Kirshner, Dave, Russell Milling, Danny Flack, Randall Walker, Wardam Wade, C.T. Wayne, Mike Finley, Mick Vijakana, Taylor Sanford, Hugh Anderson, Stephen Houston, Shannon Butson, Josh Teal, Alex Wynn, Cato the Barner, Mark Effinger, Lane Middleton, Earl Ricks, Ross, Shane Bailey, Kevin Kenoy, Matt Robenheimer, Tony Perry, Spanky, J.W. Rice, Jason Albrick, Chris, David Smiley, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Michael Morton, Rob Morgan, Nicholas Craig, one more button to push, Auburn Elvis, Kenneth Brent Rains, Mark Squire, Royce Alvarez, Dave Medinas, Joey Miller, Matthew Flagstaff, Ivor Evans, Brandon Smith, Kevin Mahan, James Taylor, Brant Rumble, Donnie Reynolds, Justin Bean, Ronald McCollum, Wade Carson, Russell Souther, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Patrick Williams, Robert Drain, Joseph Iliff, Steven Schuster, Trevor Johnson, Thomas Brinson. We're nearly to the end. Paul Bankson, Stephen Wyatt, Lawrence Kane, John Zavachin, John Stubbs, Ben Amos, and a number of other fine folks. Again, they've changed the way it looks. If I left you out, let me know. I'm going to try to figure out what's going on and why it's showing me such a strange, it's showing me the names in different orders, and I've repeated some probably, and it's including people who are no longer and all that. So I apologize for mangling that, but I'll get it straightened out. I was just thought I could get it right off the site. In any case, too much of the sausage getting made there. Let's get back to business. Do we have some questions, John?
We do.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun 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 on the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right. What do we got?
I didn't even ask for questions, but there are some individuals who are always thinking.
They're smart.
Hey, here's a cool question that I'd like to hear them answer the podcast. So they're emailing us at auwishbone@gmail.com.
auwishbone@gmail.com, folks. Yeah. You can go on Twitter and send them in to John that way, too. But you can also use the email.
All right. First question. The first question is from Tom Anderson. Who says, Van and John, I'm curious about your thoughts on Joseph Goodman's Gus Has the Pieces in Place article published on AL.com. He was specifically referring to Kevin Steele's extension, but raised many good points to build his case. Do you agree with the window of opportunity created by Auburn coaching moves and future roster combined with speculation on off years ahead for LSU and Alabama? Do you think Bo Nix is the best returning quarterback in the SEC? War Eagle.
All right, let me address a couple of those things, and I want to hear what you have to say. I'm not sure about the quarterback situation because I'd have to sit down and look at everybody that's coming back versus everybody that's not. I think Bo has the potential to definitely be the best quarterback coming back. I don't know, though, what his competition is off the top of my head. But the other thing I really am interested in hot to talk about that you brought up there was I am a strong believer after many years of experience at watching this and talking about it and thinking about it. I'm a strong believer that there really is almost no tomorrow in football. You know, in other words, we can say, well, we've got the coaches in, we're getting the coaches in, we're bringing in the players, and man, the next 2, 3, 4 years, you know, let me tell you, are going to be good. Well, let me tell you, you better win something pretty good this coming year. Because you never know, right? I mean, there is no tomorrow in college football. I mean, think about if you're Terry Bowden in 1997, and you're like, man, we had Damian Craig, you know, our offense is playing at a high level. We had Brother Oliver play, you know, the defensive coordinator. Auburn's going to be great in 1998 and 99, and we end up winning 3 games in 98 and 5 games in 99. Terry's gone. Brother Oliver's gone. We have a whole new staff, whole new players, new quarterback. Everything turns over completely by 99 and 2000. You know, think about just about any team you want to think about. You know, 2010. You know, oh, if we got Cam Newton and all this and Nick Fairley and all, we're going to just recruit at a high level and we're just going to keep the ball. We're just going to be reloading, not going to be no more rebuilding. We're going to be reloading. And 2 years later, we're 3-9. So, you know, you can look ahead and think, oh, yeah, man, we're building now for the future. But Auburn has the roller coaster history that we all know. And we really are more of a program that kind of has to rebuild every few years. We just are. We have to kind of rebuild every few years. And so I look at what we have coming in this year and I think, yeah, in 2020, we have a chance to be really, really good. But honestly, John, I don't know who the head coach is going to be in 2021. I don't know who the quarterback's going to be in 21 or at worst, maybe 22, you know, depending on how Nix does. Or how healthy he is, or if he plays really, really well and then leaves or something. I don't know anything about our future over the next 3 or 4 years. There is no tomorrow in college football. It's 1 year at a time, and you make everything you can possibly make out of that year, at least if you were the Auburn Tigers. Your thoughts?
I think that's a good way to look at it. I mean, I think you don't want to look at it and go, we're accumulating assets for the future.
Right.
The other thing I would say is that I think Auburn has a level of coaching stability and talent on the roster that makes it to be in a position where we can compete for the SEC title as we've competed the last few years, and we're going to compete again next year. I think I've talked before about the blue chip ratio, which is the ratio of 4 and 5 stars to other players on your roster, and that needs to be at a certain level to be a contender for the national title. And Auburn is in those group of teams because of the level of recruiting they have done. And, you know, people can fuss and say, well, we're not Georgia and Alabama are still recruiting better than us. But, you know, it's a matter of degrees, and Auburn has enough talent on the roster to beat those teams. I think, you know, particularly they've done a really good job defensively in building depth and developing guys for the future. And so we've lost some great players this year, but I don't think the bottom's going to fall out of defense by any means. I think we're going to be good. And having a returning quarterback, you know, and like you talked about earlier, the potential for the offense to become its better self is exciting. If we combine that with a good defense, we're going to be in good places. I think, you know, Auburn football is in a place where, you know, we can contend, we can make stuff happen. Where, you know, we're replacing, you know, Florida and Oregon on the schedule next year with North Carolina and Kentucky. So that's, you know, and Kentucky's good, but that's, you know, that's better.
Yeah.
And it's Kentucky at home versus Florida on the road, which is, mm-hmm. you know, another level. So I think, you know, those kind of things make me optimistic. And so the subject of Tom's email is Auburn championship within 3 years. And I really, really, really believe, I think we're going to win the SEC in the next 3 years. And that means go to the playoff. I think that's going to happen.
That would be great. I just feel like Auburn in the next 3 years is not something that we can ever talk about. I can look at Auburn next year, maybe 2 years, but after that, it's just like the magic eight ball says, answer hazy, ask again later. And by later, I mean that year, you know, because it's just impossible. You just never know. There's too many variables. And it's also, yes, we're bringing in new players, but we're losing our old players. You know, it's like, yay, look at 2020. We'll have Nick's back and we'll have, you know, new receivers and our old receivers. And I'm like, and linebackers, I'm like, yeah, we lose our offensive line and we lose our punter and we lose our defensive line and we lose our secondary. So it's like seasons come and go, and that gives with one hand, but it takes with the other. And so we might be better in one area, but we'll be weaker in another. And it never, you know, you just have to find those magical years when everything lines up. And for us, that's like once every 8 or 10 years. It just is, you know. So
it's fair. All right. Next question is from Preston Settle, who says, John Devan, I'm a member of the Soundboard Fan Club.
We got to get better at celebrating.
That's right.
And he says, my questions concern the offensive line. Yeah. He says, now that Gus has announced that J.B. Grimes will be moving on, what do we think about the offensive line next year? Out of the early enrollees, who do we see making an impact? And out of the players in the current roster, who do you see earning a starting position?
Well, you know, first, with all due respect to the 5 fine seniors that are leaving us, and I honor them for all that they did accomplish, I also, in just kind of a cheeky way, want to tell them,
you have failed me for the last time.
Because you're going away. I was mean. I'm sorry. That was cheap. I apologize. I had to do it. They just ticked me off one time too many, but that's fine. They had their moments, and they passed protected pretty well. So what are your thoughts about the offensive line coming up?
No, it's again, they were seniors, and they did their job, especially against Alabama. But as a group, I mean, we did not run the ball well the last 2 years. So some of that's on them, and some of that's the running backs. And I think the running back side is better. We're in a better place, you know, going forward than we have been. You know, in terms of the new guys, you know, who can walk in the door and make a difference could be, you know, could be a walk in the door guy the first day. I don't know. I mean, Killian Zaire, is a junior college guy, but I think he's been banged up a bit. Avery Jernigan and Tate Johnson are, you know, high school guys, but highly recruited guys. You got guys that have been on the roster that redshirted, that kind of thing, that are around. Keandre Jones in last year's class, I think, is a guy that a lot of people think, I think, could play. I think Bro'Darius Ham is the number one guy that people have talked about.
It seems like he's been waiting for like 11 years for his chance, you know, because of his health issues. It's been a long time for him.
So it's true. That's a guy that everybody's been waiting to see what he can do. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, and they say that because he can play. He's been in practice and he's been pushing guys around. So I think that's the biggest thing. I think he's a guy that people know. There's a couple guys, you know, coming back from injury and that are returning guys that we're not sure about. The center, Nick Broms, I think was good at the end of the year. I think he'll probably continue to be center. So that's the one returning guy. But I would say I could see a situation where, you know, Bro'Darius Ham steps in at either tackle or guard, either one, and definitely is one of the five guys next fall. But I could see potentially Keandre Jones at guard stepping up to one of those spots. But I think these new guys are going to be given a shot. I mean, that's part of the thing with having a new offensive line coach is everybody's at ground zero with Bicknell. He hasn't spent time developing or investing in these guys, so he's going to give everybody a shot. And so there may be some guys who haven't gotten playing opportunities before for Auburn that are going to step up and make a difference now.
Yeah.
So we see that all the time with coaches that, you know, different players get different opportunities for them. So
yeah, absolutely. Any other questions?
Nope, that's it for now.
Okay, well, let's just take a quick...
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
So I did a poll on Twitter a while back when the two Mississippi coaches were hired, Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach. And I asked basically which one of those you think would be more successful or would you rather have, you know, if you had to pick between the two. And it was interesting because Leach jumped out to a big lead and then Kiffin made a big comeback and kind of pulled even. And then in the tail end, Leach ended up winning. Would you agree with that? Would that have been your vote, Leach over Kiffin?
Probably. I mean, I think the other day, like, for example, Leach stole the defensive coordinator away from Syracuse, who had been at, San Diego State, maybe. And so I thought that was a good move. So part of it is not just them, it's the guys around them. But I think they both did pretty well with their staffs. But probably I'd vote for Leach, just consistent track record. I think he's done well in a lot of places.
It is kind of funny, though, when you say, well, I'll take the one that's like more mature in public. And you're like, well, I don't know. I guess Leach. But when the pirate guy is your more mature of the two coaches in your state in the conference, that's uncomfortable a little bit. So you have a note here about new Mississippi State quarterback.
Actually, they got a transfer today.
Oh, okay.
From KJ Costello, who was at Stanford.
Oh, okay.
As a grad transfer.
Wait. Somebody transferred from Stanford to Mississippi State?
Yes.
I have to process that for a second. Okay.
Palo Alto to Starkville.
Well, they're very similar politically, aren't they? Yeah, the Bay Area versus the Choctaw Reservation.
Food options are probably the same, too.
Yeah. The cultural opportunities, you know, are the same. Absolutely. So you go from Nancy Pelosi to... I don't know who their congressman is, but I'm sure it's Colonel Rebel somebody. So, wow.
But the interesting thing for, you know, them is they, you know, they've had these guys that weren't good passers that are more runner athletes at quarterback. And they recruited a guy out of high school actually that signed, you know, before even Leach got there, who was a, you know, a run and shoot quarterback in high school, an area guy.
Yeah.
But this guy, Costello, is more of a pro-style passer and less of the traditional Mississippi State quarterback.
So he's a graduate transfer?
Yes.
He's already got his Stanford. He's not jeopardizing his Stanford degree by coming to Mississippi State. Okay. He's just wanting to spend a year with Mike Leach as a passer. All right, that's a little easier for me to process.
He was looking for a place to go play football for a year.
Right. And as a passer, you can do worse than under Mike Leach. So, okay. All right. And, of course, Brady from LSU went to the Panthers, which I'm shedding lots of tears over.
Yeah. Vaya con Dios.
Yeah, absolutely, my friend. And, of course, Aranda went to Baylor. So LSU is wholesale. I mean, I think if LSU had the choice, you can keep one of the following three coaches, Dave Aranda, Joe Brady, or Cookie Monster, I think they would have probably not chosen to keep the one they have. But maybe I'm wrong. But but they kind of credit him, though, don't they? I mean,
but no, he doesn't. I think he is really underrated.
Yeah, he is.
And also, he picked those guys.
I just don't want to believe it. I know it's true, and I have to accept it. But
and the other piece of it is, it's not just picking them, but empowering them and staying out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something that he learned by failure.
Well, he didn't do it with Canada.
Yeah, but I think Canada was a bad fit altogether. So yeah. I think that was a failed experiment from early on. But I think he learned, you know, in those cases. And I think he's better. And I think, you know. It's interesting they hire Bo Pelini as a defensive coordinator. Former Nebraska head coach who's been a Mac.
former defensive back that played against Reggie Slack and Stacey Danley and Alexander Wright and that great 89 team. Let's see. Who else went pro early? You had a note. Besides,
I just had a note that
Iggy.
We hadn't done a show in a while. There were a lot of players that went pro early. I was thinking about other teams and the impact on them.
Yeah.
LSU had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys go pro early.
Wow. Well, what else are they going to accomplish? I mean, yeah, I don't blame them.
Well, but it's not just – it's not just Brady and the seniors. There was a couple of senior receivers. But, you know, Clyde Edwards-Hilaire, Grant Delpit, Justin Jefferson, you know, Patrick Queen, two offensive linemen, their best pass rusher, Chase on. I mean, that's a huge
–
huge amount of losses for them.
LSU is not repeating the national championship. If they do, Orgeron should be coach of the year for the decade.
No, and then an equally bad, you know, Georgia lost Jake Fromm, DeAndre Swift, and three offensive linemen.
Yeah, I'm crying.
These are on top of the seniors.
On top of the seniors, right. Yeah, these are guys they didn't necessarily count on to lose if they lost. So, yeah.
That's right. And we know who Alabama lost.
The Iron Bowl. Let's see. Georgia has a new offensive coordinator,
Todd Monken.
Yeah, I've heard the name.
He was the Mississippi, the Southern Miss head coach a few years ago when they were pretty good.
Yeah, that's right.
Exciting.
Yeah.
And then since then he's bounced around and done other stuff. And he's been an NFL offensive coordinator the last few years. So interesting. I think their offense was bad and really underachieved. You know, they lost a guy to Tennessee, the guy that was at Arkansas with Bielema, and they replaced him with this guy Cooley, who was at Miami as the OC, and then was a good recruiter, been on Rick's staff, and he wasn't a very good offensive coordinator. Some of that was, I think, he was doing what Rick was telling him to do. No, Kirby Smart was telling him to do.
Yeah,
and I saw Rick because I think that's where he was at Miami with. But anyhow.
Same level of success at Georgia. Don't worry about it.
That's right. So, you know, they ended up, you know, Cooley, you know, was going to get demoted basically, and he left and went to Texas A&M. So now it's Monken's show, and we'll see. They had the transfer. They got a grad transfer quarterback from Wake Forest. So I'm interested to see how he does. And it's a new offense there. But, so that'll be interesting to keep. That'll be something to really keep our eye on.
Alabama lost a few.
Not as many as I wanted.
No. Well, if it had been everyone, that would have been great. Shut the program down, you know.
We can't have that. And stupid Jalen Waddle was not eligible to go pro yet, so he'll be back.
And then big things at Miami. You get Rhett Lashley. Perhaps you've heard of him as the new offensive coordinator there in the old job held by another Auburn offensive guy, Patrick Nix, a few years ago. And then Houston's De'Eric King, the guy that, like, decided he didn't want to play football anymore at Houston because they were losing despite his best efforts, which struck me as just hilarious. I'd never seen a player just basically quit in the middle of the season because you guys suck and you're letting me down. And then finally he just said, instead of coming back next year and hoping that you don't suck as bad around me, I'm just going to go somewhere else. I mean, talk about a mercenary me first attitude. I mean, I understand in a way. I understand he's just trying to do the right thing for himself and his career and make the most of it and get in the NFL and all that. I get it. But man, the optics on it really are terrible, aren't they?
They are. The stopping mid-season and sitting out thing is tough. But it's also like he had three coaches and four offensive coordinators or whatever while he was in Houston. And the new coach, I think, was kind of tanking a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I think they wanted to have a youth movement kind of thing. And they, you know, I think they were not unhappy. I think it was kind of a mutual parting of the ways ultimately. So,
well, after everything that happened, I could see them saying, you know, look, dude, you clearly you're in it for you and not for their team. And so why don't you go find another team to not be in it for?
Yeah. And so, and I think Rhett's done a good job. It's going to be exciting to see how he does at Miami. And I think King is a titanic upgrade over what they've had at quarterback there, so which has been the dregs. So
absolutely. So all right, so coming up, this is this show will air late Monday, early Tuesday morning, and so I believe you said the Arkansas game is tomorrow Tuesday instead of Wednesday.
Keep talking.
Okay, so we got that to look forward to, and then we've got signing day, the late, I don't know what you want to call it now, it's not really signing day anymore, honestly. When you only sign like two or three players, most teams, and even then, it's just like the last couple off the stack. So there's several things still this week coming up in Auburn sports to keep an eye on.
It is the Arkansas game is Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern.
6 o'clock normal. Okay. All right. Any final thoughts, John, before we wrap it up for tonight?
It's good to be back at, you know, in the routine and grinding out some shows and talking about stuff. Talking
Absolutely.
About Auburn Sports City.
Yeah, again, I had pneumonia for a couple of weeks. I'm still kind of getting over the tail end of it. Took my last antibiotic today. And so I just couldn't do any shows. I got a jam-packed show week. I got a jam-packed show week this week. I got this show tonight. Tomorrow night, Tuesday, Alan Porter and I are sitting down to talk about Skyfall. We only have one more to go after that before No Time to Kill comes out. That'll be awesome. It's taken Alan and me 2 years to do it. We've done a movie review a month for 2 years, and we're ending just as No Time to Kill comes out. So it worked out perfectly. I'm very proud of that. So we'll be recording that tomorrow night. And then another programming note, Thursday night I'll be recording a new White Rocket show with a longtime Avengers Assemble member and comics writer Scott Harris. I'm looking forward to talking to Scott for the first time. I've known him for 25 years through the Avengers site and the group and everything, and I've never actually talked to him or met him, so I'm looking forward to having him on the show on Thursday. So there'll be a lot going up on the old White Rocket and on Her Majesty's and AU Wishbone feeds this week. And again, don't forget to go check out our live video show that we did yesterday. It's on YouTube. Otherwise, I guess our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
Rigger, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.